Got watches here. You weren't here.
Call a meeting order. This is the Commerce Committee, the 7th March 1979. And I'm the chairman. My name is Brown. All members of the committee are present. All of the members working on the fund. And the time set in hearings on the sunset law review on the alcohol board. And several people here to testify.
We have the telecom capability on Southeastern.
Recipient Ketchikan.
They have had live catch all, but they don't have any witnesses.
So it may be they will be able to take them in this room.
If someone does show up at one of those places, we'll try to make sure they get a chance to testify this morning.
Before we begin taking testimony from witnesses, I'd appreciate it if Martin Bailey, Brady. Would just give us a summary overview of the report prepared by the Division of Legislative Audit on the Alcoholic Control Board. Just kind of short, so you can understand.
Our audit report contains seven recommendations that recommend various changes to the ABC board. The first recommendation is what we feel is our strongest recommendation, where we think the most change is needed. That is, we feel that the enforcement responsibility for the ABC board should be transferred to a special ABC enforcement unit within the Department of Public Safety. Now, the reason we feel this is that currently the enforcement officers do not have any police powers. We feel that the type of inspection and investigation that they do are ineffective because of the fact that they do not have any police powers. We feel that they are unable to gather evidence that can then be used in conviction. Currently, without a conviction, the ABC board is not issuing any type of a real penalty. We also believe that the enforcement officers are just verifying a sanitary requirement that is a duplication of efforts that is currently being done by the Division of Public Health and the Department of Health and Social Services. Currently, the type of penalty that is issued is a notice of violation by the enforcement officer, and this notice of violation does not carry a penalty. So again, to emphasize, we feel like they do not have sufficient authority to enforce the violations until such time as the enforcement officers are in fact police officers with various powers such as the powers of arrest, search and seizure, the right to carry weapons. We feel like they will not be effective in implementing the laws. Our second recommendation, let me just mention one other thing. In our prior audits, we did back in 1974, and we also did a follow-up audit to the ABC board in 76. Again, in both of these reports, it was noted that the board's enforcement and investigative functions were not adequate. So this is something that has been emphasized in prior years as well as in this current audit for sunset legislation. Okay, recommendation two, the ABC board should be placed under the administrative control of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. With the administrative and licensing responsibilities transferred to the Division of Occupational Licensing. It is, I believe, that the administrative and licensing functions that are currently being carried out by the ABC board could very easily be handled with the current staff under the Division of Occupational Licensing and Commerce and Economic Development. That department currently has 21 regulatory boards that basically carry out the same type of administrative and licensing functions as does the ABC board. If the ABC board was transferred over to the department, then you could conceivably have a cost saving of approximately $54,000 by eliminating two administrative positions that are currently under the ABC board. Third recommendation, the ABC board should adopt a regulation delegating the authority to the director of the Division of Occupational Licensing for the routine issuance, transfer, and renewal of uncontested licenses. Currently, the board is meeting approximately eleven times a year.
You're only mandated
to meet four times a year, of course, if you meet as often as they'd like.
However, we've noted an average time of, I believe it was 77 days,
average processing time of 70 days
to get out renewals of licenses. We think that in most cases, these renewals and also the issuance and transfers are routine type of process, which could be carried out by a director, not necessarily the board itself, and by delegating this responsibility, which is allowed for in the statute itself. The board would not have to meet as often and possibly have the more economical and efficient use of existing funds and manpower. In conjunction with recommendation five, the renewals of licenses should be made in a timely manner. Again, as I mentioned, the average processing time for a renewal is 70 days. We feel that this is too long. One of the problems that we see in the long period of time for renewal is the 30-day period that municipalities have to respond to the intent to issue a new liquor license. If the intent board could give their notice prior to the actual renewal date, the 30 days could run prior to the renewal date, and the delay would not have to be, or the issue of time would not have to be 70 days, we believe. Recommendation number four, no two members of the ABC board should be engaged in the same business, occupational, or profession. Currently, the board can have a forum with three members.
If there are two members of the same industry on the board, it is conceivable that they could carry a majority vote within a forum.
Recommendation six, requirement for $2,500 cash refund bond for a beverage dispensary license should be eliminated. This amount was set back in 1939, as we are all aware, the economic value of a beverage dispensary license has greatly increased. We feel the economic value itself of the license carries enough penalty in case of revocation that a $2,500 cash refund bond is unnecessary.
And then the final recommendation is to direct the Office of the Governor.
And just a recommendation that appointments should be kept current, and also they should be staggered or declared by law.
This is currently not the case. There are several appointments on the board that run for the same term.
Thank you very much.
I have some questions regarding the recommendations. First of all, did auditors consider the behavior of the usual safety when the recommended enforcement responsibility moved to public safety?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the behavior of the Department of Public Safety when giving money, do you take that into account? Not specifically, no. Of course, we've audited various entities in the Department of Public Safety in the past, and we have no reason to believe that this would be a problem. But in this particular audit, we did not specifically go into the Department of Public Safety and look specifically at the unit that we would have, the enforcement officers. Well, of course, this is the question before us now regarding the enforcement function of the division of occupational licensing from another review. Pointed out that the committee, too often, from the Department of Public Safety, money positions, and what they're used very often, very little relationship with the legislative body, except for the last minute juggling before budget review of the department coming to the finance committees. And we might just end up funding two or three more major crimes as a result of transfer of enforcement function and having no enforcement. At least been claimed by people with the budget category over the last few years. The other question I have is, don't you think recommendation number two is a little bit inconsistent with the findings and report done by the Division of Legislative Audit
on the Division of Occupation Licensing. What I mean by that is, it seems to me that you, you plural, that is, Division of Occupation Licensing, saying that occupation license is hardly working law, and yet in this, recommendation, you're contending to get something else under the umbrella, and have a year-old report.
That could be a problem, definitely, it would be our hope that as a result of suddenly when you have an audit report, perhaps occupational license, it would be more efficient and effective in the future.
Questions by the other members of the committee, Randolph?
Yes, I've got a couple of questions. One, I think you stated that the enforcement had been relatively ineffective due to the fact that they didn't have proper authority to function. How ineffective has it been?
It is our opinion that we have it in the report. We know how many criminal actions have actually been. How many convictions have resulted in the past number of years. It's been a very low amount. From the amount of authority that they have. When you say how ineffective they have been, we feel that they've been totally ineffective because we feel they have no method to enforce liquor laws.
Is it safe to conclude then from that that the industry has been functioning with practically no enforcement of liquor laws?
That is our opinion.
Now, what's the problem?
That the officers themselves have no power to gather evidence.
What problems has society suffered because of this lack of enforcement?
That really gets out of the scope of our audit as far as the But that's really all I need to say.
I haven't noticed any effect myself. I don't know if anybody else will mention it.
I've seen you open your audit.
I'm checking on the chairman of the Commerce Committee. I think that's a point well noted, though, however. And you also mentioned in recommendation four, I think, that it was at least a possibility that you could have two members of industry as a majority on the board. To your knowledge, did your audit indicate that it happened often, frequently?
During January 1, 1974, June 30th, 1978, that situation did occur a minimum of five times.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much for being with us, and presumably the only time Gerald Wilmer joins us, he is the legislative auditor.
Before we proceed, those people who have not been following our marathon meeting, I'd like to just summarize a little bit about what we think our understanding is, what the sunset is. Anyone who is concerned with the meeting, the committee should look at the last statute, particularly 4460-50, which sets out the duties of this committee with regard to the sunset review of any division, department, or government when it refers to us. It requires various ways that we have public hearing, and determine whether or not the presentation made to the committee, the effect that the commission agency or board has met the burden to demonstrate to us, on the government, not on the committee, demonstrate to us that our act of the public inquiry is very standard. And therefore they should continue. If we do not submit a report to the House on the 15th of March, then the 60th legislative day under the statute, the effect of the unit is terminated. On the termination of the case, 30 and 30, 79, follow up for your business. If we do submit a report, we must also follow the legislation by the committee. Extending that date and also the passage of that legislation. So, part of our intention is to act against our government unit. to force the legislature and the people involved to really carefully look at and get into doing the job and determine whether it should continue and if it should continue, what changes we should do and didn't.
Let's just check and see. Anybody arrive in Ketchikan on the line yet?
Yes, Chairman, we have no one to participate this morning.
Okay, do you expect anyone this morning or tomorrow morning?
We have several people plan to listen, possibly one to have to talk. Not this morning, that I know of.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, no one is present. There are no plans to invite anybody into the situation changes. It's very hard to predict what we're going to have in turn out for any community. We've had everywhere no witnesses, incredible numbers of witnesses.
Regarding the case, but give a chance to try to cover the people that do have committee room today.
Before we continue, however, I'd like to ask Mr. Rock what your situation is regarding members of the ABC.
I know that unlike the Transportation Commission, you're not any kind of full board. And you may have time constraints, that's it, this thing is getting three days of hearings, and is there some way in which we'll be able to have at least one member, maybe not necessarily the same member, available during these hearings?
Thank you very much, sir. If we could please, with Mr. John J. Schaefer from Nome. Sit down there, if you would, turn that microphone on, just pull the torch.
My name is John Schaefer, and I am from Nome, Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here this morning. Mr. Scott, who represents the legislature in Nome, had informed me of when the testimony would be received in Nome, but I won't be present on those days there, so I appreciate the opportunity to testify here in Juneau. Before I present my prepared testimony, I'd like to take advantage of the opportunity to respond to Representative Randolph's question as to what the problem is when there is not active investigation and enforcement of the law in some of the rural areas. And I've been in Alaska now 17 years, and until I moved to the northwestern part of Alaska, my main concern about the Alcohol Beverage Control Board was the area of issuance of licenses. There were times over the years when the board seemed very eager to place new licenses in areas of the state where the local citizens really weren't interested in the change of lifestyle that might be brought to a neighborhood or the excessive number of licenses that might be issued in a village. But since going to Northwest Alaska, it seems to me that the problem when there's not an aggressive investigation or enforcement by the Alcohol Beverage Control Board is that in many communities, bootleggers and irresponsible business persons operate with impunity in these situations without the help from a strong Alcohol Beverage Control Board investigative unit. I only know secondhand the situation in Bethel. In Nome, we can be very grateful that the majority of the business persons there are very responsible citizens and want a reputation of being honest and upright. But when you have even one person who is not honest and upright in a situation like that, it takes a person who does not have fear of reprisal to stand up and even issue a statement of complaint against a business person. And I can speak with some personal experience on that situation of the kind of courage that it takes to stand up and say, we want our liquor establishments to be run properly. In fact, if some of you read your newspapers, you'll be aware that I was the leader of the effort to dry up Nome, which made international news because it was so preposterous to even try to do such a thing. And many of the honest business people of Nome quietly and privately and off the record thanked me for helping Nome to run their businesses at a more ethical level. And I am not free to even say who thanked me, because they told me they didn't want it known. But Nome, I am told by those friends I have who wandered the bars, is a better place to live today because the citizens took the issue in their own hands. And the Alcohol Beverage Control Board assisted us in that effort by coming to Nome and saying that we've never had any protests from Nome, as far as we know, in the history of Nome. The quote was printed in one of the local newspapers. To be exact, as long as I have been on the board, I don't think, seen, or even run across the protest of a license in Nome. And that's understandable. To do that means you're a marked person. This is a quotation of the gentleman, ABC Director Pat Chirac. I would like to leave the quote with you. He may not have said that, of course, that was in the press.
We're very familiar with that kind of behavior.
Yes. And there were persons eager in town to put the most favorable light on the liquor industry, and so they would probably pick out one sentence and publish it. Then if I may just refer to my prepared remarks. Reading the performance review of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board was an interesting experience. This experience confirmed some of my impressions gained by nearly 17 years of living in both rural and urban areas of the state. Looking at the funding and personnel pattern, at the makeup of the board, as well as some of its corporate actions, I have suggested in writing to at least one governor that the name should be changed to the Alcohol Beverage Promotion Board. The citizens of rural Alaska need help to deal with the serious social problem of alcoholism. They do not need empty promises. If there is not enough person power to do the job of enforcement, then transferring that responsibility to a special unit within the Department of Public Safety has its attractions. The main purpose of my testimony here today is to urge serious consideration of amendment to Title IV, Chapter 5, Section 0405010, which would mandate that no two members of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board should be engaged in the same business, occupation, or profession. This would provide some protection against heavy influence by the liquor industry. More importantly, it would bring some changes in approach that could open the door to an improved track record for this agency. I'd also like to suggest, in light of this, that there be a requirement added to the statutes that someone on the board be involved in the treatment of alcoholism, with wording similar to another act that you have adopted in the past as a legislature, which would say that one member of the board shall be a person who has evidenced an interest in the problems of alcoholism and who has knowledge of the social problems encountered in the rehabilitation of alcoholics. It's my suggestion that if you were to change from two members to be relating to the beverage industry to one, that that new position be allocated to someone as I have suggested. I am keenly aware that persons with a serious alcohol problem are going to obtain alcohol if humanly and physically possible. There's no way to prevent this. However, it is my own personal belief that it is not necessary to endorse and aid this problem of alcohol abuse by lack of controls and poor enforcement of broken laws against those who seek to profit from problems. In Nome, 60% of the families have at least one or more members who suffer from alcohol abuse. In Alaska, it seems that everyone is suggesting that alcohol abuse is the number one health and social problem in our state. I believe that solutions can be found to this when all forces involved work together. The victims of alcohol abuse do not have any paid lobbyist here in Juneau. It then becomes the responsibility of the members of the legislature to withstand any pressure to weaken the proposed amendments to Title IV, Chapter 5. My primary thrust here, and it's always been, is not anti-industry. It is pro-law enforcement, it is pro-control, and it is pro-concern for the victims of alcohol abuse.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I have a couple of questions. Are you familiar with the work done by a couple of the Senate committees over the last couple of years or the last revision commission attempting to rewrite sections of their provisions of Title IV?
Yes, somewhat familiar.
Have you been close enough to that that you had a chance to review any of that draft material?
Yes.
I am quite excited over the possibility of the portion of those revisions
which would give local communities a wide variety of options in local control and election procedures. I think that the current status is much too narrow, and if you can give communities a much broader option, I think it will provide some exciting experiments in the rural areas. My feeling now is that you almost give the local community the choice of being wide open or cutting off the flow of alcohol, and there needs to be some middle of the road options for some of the communities.
You want to ask Joyce Straub to join us. This afternoon, later this morning, she is Secretary of the Code Division. She has their material available to her. No doubt, CDC will want to look at those. I sit on that commission, so I have to make those activities.
Do you really feel that the board is deserving of the Rather discrediting the appellation, even the motion board.
And if you do see that kind of thing, why do they look like a motion board to you?
My comment on that regard was made several administrations ago, not just in recent years, but it appeared to me that even with a preponderance of testimony against issuing new licenses in some situations, the board was quite eager to issue the license as quickly as possible. And you got the feeling that they were on the side of the industry, not on the side of the people. I'm referring to experience in Kenai and experience in Chugiak, and that's the two that I'm most aware of.
By the local control aspect, under the statute, as President Whitman has proposed change. Do you favor, for instance, direct control by the municipality on the issue of issuance of a liquor license rather than the genuine collection set forth in the statute?
I have not thought that through to its ultimate ramifications, but I would be comfortable with local control because then you could deal with the people who are making the decisions, and if they were unresponsive, it would be, I believe we could vote them out of office if that was the feeling of the local people.
Well, I'll betray prejudice to the members of the committee and the board, either always stress the statutes are written. In this regard, it has not been recent behavior of the alcoholic beverage control board that they ignore local government views, and they can do it by law. That is legal, quite proper, I guess, and the law, without proper behavior question. For the alcoholic beverage control board to get the recommendation must be made by the local municipality as to the issue of a license in the area, and they can ignore it. And I know some people around here have been rather frustrated. I don't know how much Mr. Barr saw that happening while we were on the Senate. Mr. Barr also sent me a memory of that behavior board. It's not recent behavior board, but it's possible law, and I find it frustrating.
There is an example in Anchorage where the alcohol beverage control board was responsive to the expression of the municipality. And I never could quite understand what the issue was at Talkeetna, but the public press would lead you to believe that they were not responsive to the feelings of the citizens there over the issues of the license.
Questions by the other members of the committee? Mr. Randolph?
Yes, Mr. Schaefer, what do you do for
a living? I preach. I am a Methodist minister, and I'm also a Presbyterian minister.
As far as enforcement goes, the abuses, don't the state troopers have the ability to arrest people who are breaking the law?
Yes, they do.
And don't you have a state trooper in Nome?
Yes, but he does not primarily enforce the law in Nome. That's up to the city police within the city limits.
And you have city police who arrest people who break the law?
They could.
In addition to that. You say they could. They don't, in your opinion?
It's my understanding that it's against the law to serve a person who's intoxicated. There have not been very many arrests in Nome for that criminal action. And there are many times when that law has been broken in the past.
Doesn't this get down to local control, though? Can't the local people then handle the local police in such a way that you get the kind of police that the majority of the people want?
It would be possible for myself and another clergyman to go downtown and make a citizen's arrest. I don't have the guts to do that.
No.
And I never have.
But my point is, sir, that your part of your testimony has been you ought to have local control.
Yes.
It seems to me you do have, or ought to have, and you can have local control of your own city police. You have a local government out there. If they're hiring people who aren't enforcing the law, the majority of people think there ought to be enforced. There ought to be a way to handle that.
There ought to be a way, and it's been very difficult. There have been case after case where a policeman has done his duty in Nome, and he's been fired forthwith. If I were a policeman, I would think twice before I would enforce the law in this narrow area of the situation. Obviously, I'm not in control of Nome, and the election that we had, I was overwhelmingly defeated, if you'll recall, 700 to 300. So there were 300 citizens who were in favor of what I was doing and 700 who were not in favor. But the end result was that we have more control now in Nome than we had before, because there's been a warning as to how deeply 300 people feel about the issue. You won't believe this now if you know Nome, but I just checked it out last week. A person was staggering all over the streets of Nome and went into the Board of Trade, and they were not served. I checked it out very carefully. And this, to me, is just a real miracle.
Foretells the second coming.
Yes.
Just to continue this, I see a paradox in your testimony, or a conflict in it. I get it. Most of your testimony is like local control. You apparently ran yourself and were defeated on the one issue. So the majority of the people in Nome apparently disagree with you. Therefore, are you asking the state to come in and override the majority of the people in Nome?
I am asking anyone to enforce the law that is willing to do it. And I find it somewhat distressing that you have to get the local people in favor of enforcing the law before it's enforced by the police, whether it be city police or state police. I can realize it's frustrating for lawyers who might come in and have a guilty party acquitted because of local attitudes. But I would hate to think that I would have to get a majority vote on an unrelated issue in order for the state police or the city police to enforce the law.
Just a couple of questions, sir. Do you believe in prohibition?
Yes.
You believe in prohibition on a statewide basis?
I'd be in favor of it.
Do you think it would work?
Not in this state. Because you as a legislature have a track record of not funding adequately those programs which you claim to believe in philosophically. And even if you were to accept prohibition, you could cripple it by not funding the enforcement of it. That's what happened the first time around, is that the majority of the people didn't believe in it enough to enforce the law.
I think you also said that a person who had an alcoholic problem would get alcohol at any cost.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
How do you justify those two attitudes?
Basically, I justify those two attitudes by thinking that we should throw roadblocks into the way of people who are irresponsible instead of feeding them. And we have a record in Nome of taking some business persons, taking the money of an alcoholic until he was broke, and then throwing him out in the street. And I think that's an abuse of personhood that I could not tolerate. And that's why I was moved to throw prohibition out as a scare tactic to say that we better have control or we'll take away your livelihood.
Wouldn't, if Nome decided to go dry, wouldn't what would happen is that the bar owners would all move to the peripheral of the city limits and have the same trade they have anyway?
Not under your current statutes. You can't move a bar within 5 miles of the city limits. And in Nome, that means you'd have very few customers in the wintertime.
Heck of a
we already do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That brings up an interesting area.
Do you think the law should be changed with regard to bootlegging offenses in the area of hand drive for some felony offense?
Yes. Somewhere in the system, I haven't read it recently, it suggested a $30,000 fine and the loss of an airplane. I thought that was about the proper penalty.
That was the penalty that we had in Bethel in early December when we were last in the code revision issue. It was claimed that because the economic advantage is so tremendous. It's possible for someone to go in and pay the fine and bail himself out to Hawaii or something, and can't go back 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 to Hawaii or something, and can't
see, and this is a suggested question,
You had the opportunity to rewrite state laws governing air taxi operators.
Now, if I had the intelligence, I would write a statute that would allow a village, by popular vote, to make it illegal to fly booze into a village, and that an air taxi operator who accepted any of the substance knowingly would be subject to penalty. This is the testimony I've gotten from Savunga and from Gamble and from Wales, from people who are suffering because of bootlegging in those areas. I was quite aware in the debate we had in Nome that bootlegging would be a serious problem if we were ever to go, quote, no sale. I never admitted it publicly, just like if I was running for an election and somebody said I was a bum, I wouldn't discuss it, because I wouldn't, it would be a telling argument. But I would rewrite the statute so that it would be very difficult to get booze into some of our rural villages.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schaefer, how many flights do you have into Nome? Is it one a day or one a week?
We have two airlines into Nome right now, and I think that it averages three a day.
Is there somebody come up from Nome and staying in there, from some other city, is there any way you could stop him from ordering this liquor from Anchorage?
None whatsoever.
Well, are you trying to put a law in that somebody can't order it?
I was trying, under the state statutes, to make it illegal to sell within the city limits. And I don't know if this is hard to explain, but that's not going dry under the state law, because a person can carry it in their suitcase, they can order it through RCA, whatever, perfectly legally. So there's no attempt to make any place dry. In our villages, I would be in favor of making it illegal to bring it in. Philosophically, I have some problem with that. You might call it a paradox, because I even though I believe in prohibition on a personal basis, and you asked me a personal question, I gave you a personal answer, I don't think it's practical for the other factor. But in our villages, people are getting killed, and the elders are saying they don't like that, and we need to help them. I agree philosophically that it would be great if every person had the internal ability to handle alcohol, but they don't. And so we need to help them, or we're going to kill off a significant and vital portion of several generations of our citizens. And so when a city council at Savunga says they don't want the substance in their village, I am willing to pass strict law to help them.
I was over in Finland, one of my dad's. My cousin took me out, he had a car, and we were going to go to a dime dance and a few drinks. And when we got down from the hotel, well, I said, where's the car? He said, oh no, we're going to have a drink we walk. Over there, they got a strict law. If you have one drink, or even a half a glass of beer, your car stalled. Now, they got a strict regulation. They pull you over to the side, and the first thing they give you is a test to see if you have any alcohol. If it shows up on your test, tell her what they do. They put you in jail for 2 to 4 years building airports. They got some nice airports over there. But they said most of the guys what they arrest are the preachers. They got the Russian Orthodox Church over there, and they have a drink of wine, you know, in the church. That's their custom. And most of them were out there building airports. But it'll go for the president or anybody. So nobody drinks over there if you can get a law like that in this state. Then over in Denmark, they have an alcohol problem over there. So they rose to taxes. If you go over there and buy a bottle of beer, I went through the brewery over there on one of my trips. And they said it cost 11 cents to make a bottle of beer. And they're selling it in the bars for $5 a bottle. A drink over there, just a shot of Johnny Walker Red Label. It's $5.25, and the liquor don't cost any more than here. And they're trying to stop it, so that isn't working over there. The only place I ever saw it work was in Finland. Guys can drive, but you can walk around over there. You can't drive a car.
My only personal experience with the kind of situation in the village is I spent 5 days last August in a place called Wales, a dry village, and someone had brought in some booze. And 4 days, it was very idyllic vacationing there. But the fifth day, many of the people, including myself, sat in their houses in fear, not knowing what was going to happen as a result of some of the outdoor activities and attitudes there. And one grandmother just spoke to me, and she said, I don't know whether he's going to kill himself, speaking of a grandson, or one of us. And it sounded as though they had to go through that regularly because of the booze that was brought in by someone.
You mentioned selling liquor by private person. Do you know of any other laws in the liquor industry that are
Not by the industry. We have a serious problem in Nome of alcohol being sold to youth or minors, and but that is a problem that is not the industry's fault. It's some of the local citizens who are not involved in the industry, as far as I can tell.
Okay. Are you saying that? Yeah, I think. Tavern owners are legally to minors, but other people?
I have no evidence that they are. It's been a problem occasionally in past history, but not with any sense of regularity. The main problem has been selling liquor to persons who are very intoxicated. And as I say, that has been corrected enough to satisfy the local citizens of Nome since April of last year.
Mr. Schaefer, your testimony started on a line, I thought, of local control. And then you went on through some various setbacks from your position in local control. And I wonder, at this point now, are you advocating that the authority of the ABC board to issue or not issue licenses be passed on down to municipalities, boroughs, or other levels of incorporated local government? Or are you saying that it should be maintained at the state level through the ABC board?
The main thrust of my testimony, I would like for be control, without getting into the issue of where or who. I hope you hear me, that I'm in favor of control. The issue of municipality control didn't even cross my mind when I was preparing my testimony. I think this is something that Representative Brown asked me. And I would be in favor of it as the first blush in Nome, even though I know that it would be a problem for a while. But I could handle that problem much easier than I've been able to handle the problems I've got now. And so I'm not opposed to local control, as long as there's control.
Basically, we need control, and it may well be better off at the local level.
Basically, you see, my experience in Kenai, and now my experience in Nome, the city council members were basically highly in favor of placating the liquor industry, no matter what it took. But I think that if the local citizens viewed their members of their city council as having that prejudice, that it might affect the way they'd vote eventually if it didn't work.
By the way, you read some language there about a person familiar with problems and so forth, with regard to guarding the members of the
be most happy to. I just copied it from the language that authorizes the governor's advisory committee on alcoholism. Yes, so I'd be glad to read it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, one other question, Mr. Schaefer. Would you favor the limiting of the number of licenses in a given community?
Oh, definitely. Part of the problem we face here in Alaska, and it's a problem of personal rights, I wouldn't want to tamper with it, is the grandfather clause. And in most of our villages, the state law says, for example, there should be only one license for each 1,500 population. In many of our villages, there were 10 there when that was instituted. And so there's still 10, and there's nothing can be done about that.
My point is, what effect do you think that has? If alcohol is available in one place, two places, or 10 places, as long as it's available, what difference does it really make how many dispensaries there are?
That is a very good question that I do not know the answer to, but it seems like it has something to do with the lifestyle and philosophy of the community as to availability. For example, in Nome, if a person has a slight problem, he can go into one bar and get a drink, and then the next bar and get a drink, and the next bar and get a drink, and pretty soon he's so wiped out he doesn't know what he's doing. Now, someone could argue that that would occur if he was just in one bar, and I couldn't disagree, but it seemed to me there'd be more control if there were a fewer number of bars, and there might be a greater emphasis on self-control, but maybe not.
Yeah, I would think if a person's going to drink, he's going to drink, he's going to get a package store, he's going to go home and drink, he's going to be at a friend's house and drinking. You know, as long as the alcohol is available, I find very little justification for setting up a monopoly for one or two people to get extremely wealthy off of it, but for quite a few people to make a living off of it.
Yeah, on the other side of the coin, having my philosophy, I wouldn't mind taking off all limits and letting them all go broke. that would have some attraction to me.
I would submit to you that they all would not go broke, but I would agree with you.
Some would.
Some obviously.
And there are some who need to go broke.
Probably the wrong ones would go broke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one point in regards to the availability. In certain specific cases that I know of, on the upper Cuscatlan, the deaths related to alcohol seem to all be related to getting back and forth to a certain village that's not dry when a lot of other places don't have alcohol. I wonder if we're killing more people. They drown, they freeze to death, and that's the two major things because it's on the Cuscatlan River. But they freeze to death in the winter and they drown in the summertime, going back and forth to Red Devil. And I wonder if there was available alcohol in more places, there might be less of those particular people dead.
I'm sure that what you end up doing is trading the type of death that you would be promoting by the style you operate in. In Nome, I was made very clear that I would be personally responsible for every person who died driving 3 miles out to the one liquor establishment we have outside of our city limits if the town went no sale. That was a heavy burden. I would not have been responsible then for all of suicides and street deaths in Nome, I guess, because then they wouldn't have existed.
Well, I bring up the point. In that particular case of the seven people that I can think of in recent years who died in the area, they've all died relative to alcohol, but most of them died relative to transportation to and from alcohol.
Many of the deaths on St. Lawrence Island are young men about 21 years old who killed themselves in their own houses with a gun.
We had some 30 village villages, 35 40 village villages, that's the only one not dry, currently they do incredible volume of business there, also Both when you're arriving and left, or leaving, seeing massive amounts of cargo arriving in 737, all of the booze. Another question.
Yes. Talking about local control. I just question whether local control would work when the police don't enforce the law right now. Would local control help the situation again? Everybody would have pressure from the other.
It would be very difficult. 300 of us in Nome have a track record of standing up and speaking. I would assume that other communities could do the same thing if there was that kind of blatant disregard for the situation. What we have right now is everybody passing the buck. Just amazing how many bucks can be passed. The courts won't convict. The DA won't prosecute. Alcohol Beverage Control Board won't investigate. The legislature won't give us money. We just all pass the buck to one another as to why things aren't happening. And I think it would be easier to make changes on a local community where you could say that city official fired the city policeman because his son had been arrested. Let's talk about that. And I think people would have the guts finally to talk about it publicly and say that's not the way to run our city. If there's a buddy system at the level of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, number one, we don't even know what it is, unless we do a heck of a lot of research. If the legislator owns a liquor store and therefore protects the industry, we don't know who that is unless we do a lot of research. I really think that locally we could get grips on the buddy system much more quickly. That's my thinking today, anyway.
I have one more question. You mentioned suicide related to alcohol. There was a study on suicide related to alcohol, mainly pertaining to the Native population. Some of these were very dense related to alcohol. But there's still an awful lot of suicide, which indicates a growing trend.
I would agree with you that there would still be the problem. Alcohol aggravates it. But statistically, there would still be a problem.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope to address the recommendations, criticisms, and comments in the Sunset Review documents prepared by legislative.
Not directly, no, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I hope someone from the alcoholic beverage control board is going to, or maybe we'll just have to terminate you.
Let me advance the conspiracy of the last politician, Sherrod Rose, and Terry Miller, and Commissioner of Environmental Conservation, and other members. I hadn't seen John for about 13 years until Monday morning when I met him.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Pat Chirac, director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I have a prepared statement that, with your permission, I'd rather not read. I'd like to pass around with the, I think it should be stated by myself at the outset that recommendation of the Legislative Audit Committee terminates my position. I hope my comments are objective and hopefully in the best interest of the state. Also, I've asked two members of the board to be with us today, Mr. John Kohler from Fairbanks, who's a member of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. From a time constraint point of view, he has an assembly meeting tomorrow night in Fairbanks, which he says he should attend, so that is just for the information of the committee. Mr. Bob Gons, who is an industry representative of the board from Anchorage. Tim Middleton was unable to attend today. He will be with us Friday morning, though. One other member from the board who will be standing by in Kotzebue, Mr. Al Adams, will be there on the teleconference, he told me today.
If you would, while you're not going to read it, if you could just highlight the tone or the basics of your remarks, please.
Thank you. That's what I'd like to do. Let me point out, too, I've tried to prepare this statement in terms of what the committee, I guess, is to determine as far as the sunset legislation is concerned. And I tried to follow Section 4466050B and C, trying to answer those or address those items. D, I believe, is, it was pointed out at the outset of the hearing that it's the burden of the agency to justify its existence. And then there are 8 or 9 items in subsection C, which are factors that should be, I guess, addressed or looked at by the committee in making a determination for the continuance of the agency. First, I'd also like to make the point that I think, you know, an audit is an exercise that's very healthy for all concerned. I'm an auditor by education in accounting. I think it opens up room for dialogue or gives allowance for dialogue, communication. I think ABC is probably a nebulous organization with a lot of people and maybe misunderstood by a lot of people. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here. First, I think what I tried to point out here was that there should be a distinction between the staff organization within the agency and the board. They're two more or less separate functions. The original intent, I guess, of the creation of the board by legislation was to act as a body to hear public input and to act upon final decision-making measures in terms of suspending or revoking licenses, which is a key point here too in terms of what Title IV means to portray. Title IV really only addresses the licensing and the control of alcoholic beverages in an industry. The enforcement of Title IV basically relates to licensees, not the public at large. I will get into that in a minute, though. The staff runs, including myself, run the day-to-day operations of the organization, and basically in terms of processing and investigative work with issuance, renewals, and transfers of licenses. I think the continuance of the board, and I'm sure there's been a lot of dialogue and controversy and criticism of what Title IV is, what it does. It's very nebulous and vague, sometimes hard to interpret law. We're right now trying to draft regulations to clarify it, which I'll mention a little later. But I think the controversy that probably comes up is maybe a result of the reason the law or that the law is vague. And I think a lot depends on how the legislature and the state looks at what degree of control it wishes to exercise over alcohol. We get into comments by Ms. Brady earlier on enforcement. Basically, Title IV only addresses, in terms of the impact of the general public, to what is referred to as two forbidden classes. And those forbidden classes are minors and intoxicated people. Either sales to those people or those persons being in a premises, a licensed premises. Most of the suspensions and convictions that come before the board against licensees are for minors, where there has been a formal complaint, a misdemeanor complaint filed against the licensee or his employee or agent. There's been a judicial conviction. At that point in time, it comes to the board and they can suspend or revoke. In terms of intoxicated persons, there have maybe only been 1 or 2 cases pursued to exercise any enforcement with that portion of the law at all. And the only reason I can think of it is because it's purely judgmental on the part of either the state or local policing officer who has to draft up and investigate, obtain the evidence to file a complaint on that charge. We have one pending in Fairbanks. What the outcome of it will be, I don't know. We're working with Fairbanks Police Department, and there's a trial pending sometime this month, I believe. Again, within the law, all violations, no matter what they are, arrests of minors or serving intoxicated persons, are misdemeanors. There's a fine levied against the licensee or possibly against a minor if he is arrested, but there's still a misdemeanor. Also, another element here which I don't think, or in my interpretation, legislative audit necessarily got into in depth. And the other element of enforcement is civil enforcement, through which the staff can file an accusation against a licensee if there is an accumulation of hopefully documented violations where there is a premises or an operator who is not operating in the best public interest, then the board can file an accusation against that licensee under the Administrative Procedures Act. Again, I will have to admit, though, that historically, I guess that has not been used to any great extent. We have filed two or three in the last 6 months or so. It's interesting to see how those kinds of things develop and what kinds of decisions hearing officers render. Getting back to local enforcement, Title IV also provides that all license fees collected for licenses, for the various types of licenses throughout the state, are refunded back to those municipalities in the state who have or provide some enforcement to enforce the law. That's just a matter in terms, I guess you could relate that to, if a local agency were not enforcing the law, I guess we could request that, that those funds be terminated. I think the thrust of Title IV and what it portrays to do in terms of regulating a substance, if you want to call it that, it doesn't do anything in terms of regulating the consumption, except in terms of possibly, if you could interpret consumption with the number of licenses that Title IV allows to be issued, where they're to be issued, the population constraints, the mileage radius constraints, and those kinds of things, it probably does. But I think that's basically an expression of, through enforcement, that the board has to take stands or positions legally in terms of what Title IV allows them to do. I think in the end run, if Title IV were repealed, I would think that there would still be a very great need and a desirable need to have some kind of regulation or control over alcohol. I guess that's enough said. Getting down into the subsection C, enforcement, you know, in terms of my experience as director, I don't think necessarily has to always be the result of prosecution through resulting in a judicial conviction. I like to point out here that we average in our office about 65 phone calls a day. And that's quite a number of phone calls for three people in the licensing staff and three in the enforcement staff. And that's mentioned that in the legislative audit report that 15% of the time relates to helping licensing staff. That's a necessary evil, because enforcement is performed not only by licensing through the processing of applications, reviewing petitions if those are involved, investigating population in areas that are outside municipal boundaries, interviewing people, and then answering just questions in general. I think that enforcement is also preventative. It doesn't necessarily have to be a publicized kind of a thing or to be recognized that, you know, everybody and his brother has to know about it. I like to think that it's a preventative measure too. A lot of enforcement is done over the telephone. People inquire.
Can you give us what you might
represent? Many times we'll get a complaint on the phone, which may be, you know, at low level or whatever. We'll call a licensee or inquire with an applicant about what he's pursuing and try to clarify the situation before, you know, there's any enforcement action that's required. I think, you know, there are many times enforcement could be pursued, but I look at it in terms of the cost to the state, time involved with my staff. If we can resolve it without having to pursue a civil action or even a filing of a formal complaint, I would rather do it that way. To me, I think legislative audit uses the term criminal Title IV doesn't address criminal aspects of anything, except within possibly, you could imply or construe the forbidden classes that I mentioned earlier, conviction of minors and conviction of licensees. I don't know if that answers your question or not, Mr. Chairman.
How can somebody keep track of telephone calls? Do you have a log?
I started a log about 14 months ago. I wanted to know what the impact was.
And can you see a sense of that log? Do we know what kind of enforcement we're talking about?
The log, I'll have to admit, is on three desks in the form of tick marks on a calendar. Because there's three or four people answering the phone all the time. Then they summarize that for me, and I have a monthly rendition of what the totals are.
How can you, dealing in that informal way of telephone, have any indication that you're calling for preventive enforcement is consistent or is following any particular policy at all? And also, how can other members of the government do any measures of performance of your enforcement as preventative enforcement, so that we can know what you're doing?
As far as measuring that, I think the measure is shown by, from my experience anyway, exposure to being director. The few complaints that are lodged with either myself or the enforcement staff or the board. I like to think that because of that, the communication that takes place with licensees and the public, that hopefully the problem was satisfied. At least that's my question.
Can you give us a specific example of what kind of complaint? Called in, what do you do? Call the licensee, what do you say to the licensee regarding whatever kind of complaint it was? Is there any follow-up after that? Could you describe a typical example?
Oh boy, if I could sort one here, I guess maybe an extreme example would be a lady on Fifth Avenue in Anchorage called and was rendered a complaint about a bar opening. One of the most complex organizations I've ever gotten involved with, but the end run has resulted in a meeting with about five attorneys and two or three purported licensees in my office to clear the air in terms of what the ownership of the bar was, what they were going to do to either promote a transfer of the license, what they were going to do to rectify the situation in terms of putting whoever was responsible in a responsible position so that that party knew he was responsible, so it wasn't going to end up in court cases if it had already been through about two or three. That kind of enforcement, Mr. Chairman, that gets people together and tries to resolve the problem.
Well, that's encouraging, although you said that was an extreme example. I was asking for a typical example, day in, day out kind of business.
Another example might be an inquiry as to whether or not an application is going to go before the board. There may be some comment about the status of an operation. In fact, we have one right now. On the Glen Highway near Glen Allen, people have made comments that the operation didn't operate its required 30 days last year. We sent an investigator out. He investigated people in the community, investigated the state trooper. We've talked to the licensee, and he'll probably come before the board this month.
Have you ever had any enforcement involving a retailer selling Some brand food that was not brought in the state of the normal wholesale license.
That's my name.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what these complaints that you get on a daily basis are. If you say you get an average of 65 a day, they must follow some pattern. There must be a majority of items that are, that constitute a good, pretty good-sized block of those inquiries.
I didn't mean to mislead you. When I'm talking about that number of phone calls, predominantly, most of them are licensing-oriented. They're not all complaints. I didn't mean to mislead you there. They're not complaints.
I understood them to be complaints.
No, they're not. No.
Just
I'm sorry.
Questions or just basic information about the industry.
That's right.
Out of your 65, what percentage would be complaints and what would be just normal inquiries about the industry?
Well, I probably misled you there again, too. I don't like to use the word complaint. They're inquiries more. The complaints aren't that often, to be honest with you. They're inquiries about licensing, who has done what about this. I guess another example of many phone calls was the pub application in Anchorage recently. Those kinds of inquiries, you know, from just any quarter. Most of, I imagine 30% of them are from attorneys.
Okay, that's the point I wanted to get clarified. This is
my question. Yes, I'm going to add that. Ask again about enforcement. I don't know what goes on right now. Years ago, the serving minor. And a state trooper caught the bar owner in a certain plan. The bar was closed down. Automatically, for about three days, or however long it took, before the person who owned the bar went to court and paid a fine. Well, I don't know how heavy the fine was, but at the same time, when a business goes down for three days, it's pretty drastic. Does this happen now?
Yes, it does. Only not quite that easily. There's a phrase that referred to quite frequently. I say that doesn't. That's not. Operations aren't closed down quite that easily. There's a phrase that's bandied about many times. It's called due process. And there's a significant amount of paperwork or formal procedural matters that are addressed before that action can be taken. In our regulations, we are trying to address an immediate action kind of a posture if the conditions are, you know, not in the public interest, and an enforcement officer could issue a cease and desist order. Which would allow for closure immediately until the licensee or operator showed just cause why he shouldn't be or that he was correct with the elements involved to solve the problem. I wouldn't think so.
The state gets due process and he doesn't. He's closed up first and asked questions later.
I don't think so, really. The conditions would have to be severe enough where either property or, you know, harm to an individual would take place.
Well, in fact, you recently have had some temporary suspensions of liquor license in the last couple of years.
We closed a couple of places for about 24 hours, and they solved the problem, but those were statutory problems that they were not complying with. And they complied within 24 hours.
Those involved situations where the license was not tested, as a matter of fact, violation.
No contest whatsoever. These instances involved improper financial interest in the operation of the bar.
Mr. Officer,
Alfred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kind of control does the ABC board exercise over supply within the state at the wholesale level?
None. You mean to the wholesale?
From the wholesale to licensee.
Oh. The wholesaler is required or charged with the knowledge of knowing that his sales are made to a licensed operator.
And what kind of responsibility does the retailer have in terms of his purchases?
If I recall correctly, I think the retailer is just charged with the knowledge of knowing that he's buying from a licensed wholesaler. I guess the comment maybe you might be getting at, that doesn't necessarily mean that he has to be an Alaskan licensed wholesaler. Mr. Gons might be able to clarify that for you later on.
I wanna go back to the improper interest.
The law says that no person, number, words describing it, shall not have a direct or indirect financial interest in a license unless he is a party to that license. Meaning being named on the license and subject to all the responsibilities that that privilege allows.
What is an indirect interest?
Well, one that's been before us a couple of times recently is, for example, a lease arrangement between a renter and a landlord, where the terms of the lease might say that the lease amount, monthly amount, is based upon gross sales. That's a little far-fetched, because I think that's out of tune with the normal, with the current financial community's way of leasing property. Another one might be that an employee is involved and he sort of is on an incentive payroll, where he might be remunerated also in terms of gross business that he has promoted, or something like that. Or if someone else has an investment in the property or the operation of a premises, indirectly.
What is an indirect investment?
Well, indirect is, like I say, the lease thing. He is deriving a benefit from the operation of that license as determined by what the gross proceeds of the business were. That's an indirect benefit.
Would you classify as indirect investment a wholesaler selling retail on an open account if large party to ever build a whole stand on the model sales?
Well, I tell you, I'm glad you bring that up. I have a problem with that. The law says that retailers can only sell on cash basis. Now, that cash basis is described or includes, you know, credit cards, writing checks, that kind of thing. With that in mind, I think there probably could be some stipulation in terms of the degree or extent to which a wholesaler could extend credit to those licensees.
Isn't that currently on the law?
What?
Isn't there a provision in the law that says that a wholesaler cannot have a direct or indirect interest in the operation?
I see what you're getting at. It's never been tested.
Well, I tried to find a good one with one of the people.
There have been, you know, some elements involved in stories I've heard of wholesalers taking foreclosure or judgment actions against licensees for overdue accounts. But it's never come to the point, except maybe one that I can recall, I don't know really the status of it, is the outcome of that judgment. How much does that wholesaler then have as an interest in that license? Probably would depend on what the rendition of the judgment contained, or the judgment itself.
You would not consider a situation like that a violation of the wholesaler.
I don't think so. It would depend on a lot on the circumstances and, you know, and what effort or control the wholesaler may wish to exercise against the licensee, to what degree. And that would probably be an investigatory thing, that if there were complaint or action or thought to believe that he was exercising some control, then we would have to take it on its own merits. There was one last spring, a wholesaler sold some property that he owned, involved a license. There's some stipulations in the sale contract that gave some preferential treatment to the wholesaler. We objected to those, and the contract was changed.
When's the last time somebody applied to a wholesaler license?
Oh, a couple of months ago. Well, 3 or 4 months ago.
Is that granted or is it
been granted?
How limited is that?
It was a general wholesale license.
What company was that?
Friends Grow.
Well, before that application was the last time you saw your license, there was a license.
Oh, a couple of months before then.
Was that Grant's grand?
Yes, it was.
Who was that?
Can't remember the name of it. Something imports, I think. It was a general beer and wine wholesale license. Specialty imports, I think.
Is it limited to wines?
Wine and beer.
Well,
oh boy, you've got me now. I don't recall.
Do you remember any other applications for wholesale or license that you've been associated with the alcohol over?
Gee, not that I can recall right now, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'll tell a tale out of school. About 8, 9 years ago, I was involved in a situation where a law firm I was represented by business lawyer, 41, be on wholesale liquor. Business in Alaska. And I contacted the then director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and asked for an application for a citizen.
Of what?
There wasn't any at that time.
Nobody had any application
for a new wholesale service license, nothing like that, in 1995 at that time. And apparently the industry started about amazing
Oh, there was another one about 14 months ago, too. I beg your pardon.
Was it a general?
I don't remember. It was an individual, I believe.
By the way, do you now have a form for applying for a license?
The application form we have is the same for all licenses. The applicant puts the name of the license that he's applying for.
The audit takes 70 days.
I wish I could address that. Yes, license applications do take time. That's really shorter than what a normal new license takes. We have recently converted printing licenses on the computer, and that has really been a boon to us. Three members, we had files stacked all up in the office last year, and the biggest constraint we have is, you know, we're required to send a notification of renewal to the municipality in which the premises resides. Municipality has 30 days right across the board in which to make comment if it wishes. I don't know in terms of the audit whether or not they were referring to actually mailing the license out to the licensee or processing the application and getting letters out to the municipality. I really don't know. I don't recall that having, you know, come up during the course of the audit directly to me. But with the new system, The staff doesn't have to type 1,300 licenses and process money at the same time. The licenses are pre-printed and they just really have been going good.
Catch a can, did anybody show? Catch a can, are you still with us?
Apparently,
Mr. Kohler, what is your schedule?
Later on, tomorrow.
You'll be able to be here this afternoon?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you. I think we have time for one question.
I'd rather wait this afternoon.
Okay, I've got one kind of a broad question.
I might get one lengthy too.
when we're dealing with alcohol, we seem to bring in a whole bunch of other concerns that we've got to look at, other than the other boards we've looked at so far. It seems that we get very interesting coalitions of interest where, in the case of protest, the nearest church and the nearest bar get together and jointly circulate a petition opposing the new licensee. And I wonder, in terms of all the objections that there are, the economic objections, the moral and religious, and the general, the broad public interest objections, who really fares the best in arguing an alcohol dispensary license, say, statistically in the past couple of years in license granted?
Can I answer that after?
Okay.
I'd really like to get into that because that's very important in terms of the municipal input to the board on those kinds of matters. It's really a unique area.
I am very interested in that. Who is more commonly the successful opponent for
I would like to maybe talk about that in terms of examples.
That's what I'd like to talk about.
Maybe you could get zero sources.
I think we'll stand
maybe when we come back, if I may, Mr. Chairman, continue on through my statement and then get into the other side.
Yeah.